So he hit tank number 48 tonight. And then did you see he immediately went down the stairs and slipped and got hurt and is out for the game? Hopefully he can at least make it back. I don't know how serious that knee injury is, but if he can at least come back and try and hit number 49 and get first place, that dude is unreal.
Yeah, he's very good. He's very good. And if you're listening to this podcast and you think that Yasmani Grandal or some of these other jabronis, literally any other catcher, is better than Salvador Perez, you're wrong. Welcome in to It's Always Sunny in Chiefs Kingdom, where normally we talk about a good football team, but this week, last week, maybe next week, hopefully not, we talk about a football team that's not good, and that football team, unfortunately, is the Kansas City Chiefs. It's always sunny in Chiefs Kingdom, but the Chiefs are not a good football team right now, and here to help me talk about how not good they are is my friend, Taylor. Taylor, what's going on?
Hi, Austin. Oh, you know, I'm trying to process, trying to go through what it's like to be on a losing streak with Patrick Mahomes that doesn't feel fluky. I mean, it is fluky, but it's just, it's hard. All the doubts are creeping in. We'll get through it.
You can find us on Twitter, as always, me at Real Bird Lawyer and Taylor at Taylor _ Wit. We're brought to you by Sports Illustrated's Arrowhead Report, which you can find at si.com/NFL/Chiefs and on Twitter at Arrowhead Report. You can get your official merchandise at DadBodTee, DadBodTee.com, or on Twitter at DadBodTee, et cetera, so on and so forth. We've got a fine show for you guys today. Listen, it's no fun to lose. It's not uncool. It's not good. Chiefs are going to get back on their winning ways this week, hopefully against the Philadelphia Eagles. But before we get into that, we have to talk about the news, which we do every week. We have to recap the Chiefs' second loss in a row, which will be gross. And then we're going to talk about how we're going to beat the fuck out of the Philadelphia Eagles on Sunday. So, Taylor.
Yes.
Shall we? So, Taylor, this is actually the most exciting thing we're going to talk about in the entire podcast. We're going to talk about a signing that the Chiefs made. And boy, if you spend any time on Fantasy Football Reddit over the past 8 years, you know the man that I'm talking about. It's Josh Flash Gordon.
He's legendary. And so for anyone out there that might have heard the name but not know his exploits, or at least not well enough, he was a...
Don't blame you, because it's been a while since he's had any exploits.
It's been a long time. He basically was really good in 2013. He had
literally one of the greatest wide receiver seasons ever.
Correct.
Time.
And then he started getting in some trouble with the law, with some, maybe not even the law. I don't even know if he's been like legally arrested, but the NFL for sure found out that he's been smoking weed. They started suspending him. He started just going down a dark path, and he's only played. So he's spent 54% of his NFL career suspended, which is,
that's wild.
You know, it's not ideal, but he's freaking huge. And you know, he's 30, but he has like no wear on the tires at all. I mean, he literally like hasn't been playing. So I think it's fun. And when we were talking about wide receiver additions in the offseason, and we were thinking about Juju, and we were thinking about Julio, obviously, and we were really daydreaming there. At the end of the day, we just wanted another weapon. We wanted someone better than Mecole Hardman as the wide receiver too. And Josh Gordon's ceiling is absolutely better than Mecole Hardman right now.
Oh, sure.
But his floor is incredibly low, but the cost is nothing, basically. So, like, I like the move. I like the fact that Veach is out there still trying to get better and looking at guys like this. I'm pretty cautiously optimistic about this.
I want to dive into the Josh Gordon thing a little bit because, again, this is, like, the only fun thing we have to talk about.
Yeah, people are going to turn this podcast off.
People are going to turn it off after we talk about Josh Gordon.
Yeah.
In 2013, Josh Gordon, in 14 games, had 1,646 receiving yards and 9 touchdowns. Okay. That is 117.6 receiving yards per game. Okay. That is the sixth most receiving yards per game in a single season ever in the history of the NFL. Okay. The top five guys are Wes Chandler for the 1972 San Diego. Oh, yeah. San Diego Chargers.
Superchargers.
Charlie Hennigan for the 1961 Houston Oilers. Elroy Hirsch, who I think, were you just talking about Elroy? No, you were talking about some other jabroni from, yeah. Elroy Crazy Legs Hirsch for the 1958, that was his name. Elroy Crazy Legs Hirsch for the 1951 Rams. Calvin Johnson, of course, for the 2012 Detroit Lions. And Jim Benton for the 1945 Rams. Those are the guys ahead of him. Literally one guy that anybody has ever heard of, Calvin Johnson, in 2012, the year before Josh Gordon did it. Josh Gordon did that as a 22-year-old, okay, in his second NFL season, which is bonkers. All the guys ahead of him are 26 years of age or older. Julio Jones is seventh on this list, by the way, with 116.9, almost a full yard per game after him. Julio was 26 when he did that. Jerry Rice, the great Jerry Rice, is eighth on this list. Okay.
Well, now the 2013 Cleveland Browns had three quarterbacks. I'm sure you're going to get into that, but
that is exactly what I'm going to get into.
Good deal.
Do you want to talk about who those quarterbacks were?
Because I want to talk about who those quarterbacks were because I've been grinding Josh Gordon tape all day.
Oh my God. Tell me about it.
So obviously Jason Campbell, the 32-year-old guy,
He was a former Raider at that point, and a former football teamer.
So he sucked. He started 8 games and was 1-7 and had 11 touchdowns and 8 interceptions. He was not very good.
Passer rating of 76.9.
That's right.
Not great.
Brandon Whedon was one of the worst quarterbacks I've ever seen play.
Brandon Whedon was 30, by the way. You know Brandon Whedon. You know this. But for those of you who don't know Brandon Whedon was drafted in his late 20s.
He was 29.
He was 29 when he played his rookie season. The Browns went out and spent a first-round pick on a guy who was 29 years old who had never played in the NFL before.
And obviously that didn't work out very well. He got hurt. He
was It didn't work out at all.
He had through 9 touchdowns, 9 picks, had a 70.3 rating. And finally, they, of course, used Brian Hoyer, the Destroyer, who actually was 3-0 that year.
3-0.
He had 3 of their 4 wins. They were 4-12.
I mean.
And he had 5 touchdowns, 3 picks, had an 82.6 rating, was clearly their best. I believe he started the year as the starter and then got hurt early. But so they were awful, but Josh Gordon was not. He was an absolute force. He just wrecked the entire NFL that whole year and really has been a complete a meme ever since, basically.
Yeah, listen. So Josh Gordon, 1,646 yards in 2013. His next best season came 5 years later in 2018, which was 3 years ago, was 737 yards, so less than half of his best season in 2013. And that was split between the Browns and the New England Patriots. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you want to dream a little bit, you mentioned that you were crushing Josh Gordon tape, and I don't know if you're being facetious or not, but I'm just going to assume that you were being serious.
Yeah, I was.
He was with the Browns. He finally gets unsuspended. He came back towards the end of 2017. He comes into 2018. He's not suspended. You know, he came out with the Browns. He played one game with the Browns. He was hurt to start the year. Mm-hmm. He had one catch for 17 yards. And then there was a rumor that he showed up to practice high or something like that, right? Like there was a rumor that not only did he have like a lingering injury, but also he was blitzed when he came to practice. And so the Browns promptly dump him to the Patriots because, of course, the Patriots, that 2018 Patriots team, by the way, had Antonio Brown on it, or no, that was 2019 Patriots.
Yeah.
That was a year later, but they did play on the same team because he also played for the 2019 Patriots.
Well, and Julian Edelman was on that team and he was a cheater. I mean, they don't care about any of that.
A PED user, yes, of course. Yeah. You know, you've got Tom Brady, who knows what he's up to, you know, all that different stuff. Of course, the Patriots took a chance on him. And, you know, at this point, he didn't play at all in 2015. He didn't play at all in 2016. He played 5 games in 2017 and he played one game in 2018 with the Browns before he came to the Patriots. Mm-hmm. And at this point, you know, his 2013 season was 5 years in the rearview mirror. And he comes to New England and he promptly in 11 games before he gets suspended again, put up 720 receiving yards and 3 touchdowns. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's 65 and a half yards per game. I mean, we're talking about a guy who has played very little football in his NFL career. We're talking about 56 career starts, you know?
Yeah.
And he was pretty good.
He had to hit the ground running. I mean, he had no camp with New England, just like he will have no camp with the Chiefs.
Right.
So he had to learn all the playbook stuff on the fly. He was playing with an all right quarterback. I mean, not anyone too special, but
sure, not Patrick Mahomes.
Certainly not Patrick Mahomes. And he managed to, you know, make his mark. He did have one game where he had 130 yards and a touchdown against the Packers. I mean, he was not 1600 yards good, but he was a serviceable wide receiver, certainly.
And he's not going to be 1600 yards good, right? No. Like we have a mailbag question actually from we have a mailbag question actually from our guy BM Bear, who has not been on Twitter lately but is on our Discord server, and asks, mm-hmm. What is the ceiling and floor for Josh Gordon on the Chiefs? So we might as well just talk about that right now.
Yeah.
I think obviously the realistic ceiling is not 1600 yards, because number one, he's missed three games. Number two, he doesn't know the playbook. Who knows when he's even going to be elevated from the practice squad? And number three, he's not on the 2013 Browns, where he was the only good player on the 2013 Browns. Okay. The Chiefs still have Travis Kelce. They still have Tyreek Hill, and they still have some other guys. So, you know, realistically, I think his ability to fit in as, I don't think there's any question that if he plays up to his ability, even at 30 years old, even recognizing that he doesn't have training camp, even recognizing that he hasn't played football in a while, he clearly has the ability to be the third option on the Chiefs if he plays up to his ability.
Right.
And so the question is, what does that look like? What does that ceiling look like? And I mean, listen, you know, I've heard people compare him to our guy Lance Beardwell, you know, compared his overall numbers to DeMarcus Robinson. And that's fair. Like, if you look at just what they've done, like the raw totals for what they've done over the last 4 or 5 years or whatever, DeMarcus Robinson has way more production. But if you look on like a per game and a per target basis, there's obviously no question that Josh Gordon is a much better player than DeMarcus Robinson or Mecole Hardman, even potentially at this stage of their career.
At his peak, certainly.
Anybody. And so, you know, like, I think the best case scenario, you see Josh Gordon step in, and probably not right away, but by the end of the year, fill in for what the Chiefs had with Sammy Watkins, which is a guy who, you know, if he were to be the number one, Sammy Watkins obviously had that one glorious performance against Jacksonville as the number one when Tyreek Hill got hurt early in the game, and he went for whatever it was, 200 yards and three touchdowns.
Can't believe that was even real.
I can't believe it either, but that happened. You know, Josh Gordon, he just needs to be a guy that if Tyreek Hill is double covered and if Travis Kelce is getting chipped and probably also double covered, he just has to be a guy that can win one-on-one and catch the ball. And that's a low bar. And he can do that.
So here's what I'll say here. His ridiculous season in 2013, he had 159 targets in 14 games. Now, there are 14 games remaining in the Chiefs schedule. So even though he's missed a couple games, he only played 14 back then. So he had 159 targets. Last year on the 2020 Chiefs, Travis Kelce led the way with 145. So he had more than what Kelce had last year. Tyreek Hill had 135, only 10 behind him. But there were still 400 targets to spread around between all the other pass catchers on the Chiefs, other than Kelce and Hill.
It's unbelievable that we targeted people not named Travis Kelce or Tyreek Hill
ever
400 times.
400 year. Times. That's right, because there were 611 impossible. Pass attempts, and they only accounted for 280 of them. So that's
crazy.
Oh, 380, 485. So 320. I said 400.
It's fine. But you're some fuzzy math on this.
Sure. Right. So of those 320, actually 160 of them is exactly half of that. And that's what Josh Gordon, at his absolute peak, that's what he required to do work. So, look, I'm not saying that the Chiefs are going to target Josh Gordon 160 times. They only targeted Kelce 145 times last time. But what I will say is that the volume, if he is extremely good, will be there. They will absolutely be able to, if Josh Gordon is open, they can get him the ball, and Kelce can still eat, and Hill can still eat. And hell, they might even eat a little bit more if Josh Gordon's very good. Now, this is all kind of the Always Sunny approach to this. Like, Josh Gordon still needs to keep his ass legal and on the field and not screw up any of the stuff that he screwed up plenty of times in the past. But You know, he's 30. A lot of people don't grow up until around 30. You know, he made a lot of mistakes when he was in his 20s, like a lot of people do. And if he realizes, like, shit, I can actually, like, win a Super Bowl here and, like, have, you know, a future and a career here. I mean, who knows? That could be the wake-up call he needs. I would say his theoretical ceiling is, like, 1,200 yards. Like, I really think that he could go ballistic at his peak, because that also includes the Chiefs offense. That's not just Josh Gordon getting 1,200 yards. That means that the Chiefs are just shredding people left and right because they have Kelce, Hill, and Gordon, and nobody can stop any of them. So I really do think that it's fun to dream right now. You know, it might even take him a couple weeks to get up to speed and even become active, but you know, why not? We're 1-2. We might as well think about stuff like this.
Sure. Right. Well, that's why we're spending so much time talking about a guy that hasn't played football in like a million. Yeah,
8 years, basically.
Exactly. That's why we're talking about it. I mean, for me, I think really his realistic ceiling is he probably averages about 50 yards a game. That's kind of what Sammy Watkins was doing when he was healthy. A guy that, you know, and for Sammy, of course, it would never be 50 yards every week. It would be, one week he's blowing up for 130 yards, and then the next week he literally has one catch for 8 yards, right? And then the week after that he's hurt.
I will also say that Josh Gordon is listed 2 inches taller and 20 pounds heavier than Sammy Watkins. He is as big as Sammy felt compared to Tyreek. Josh Gordon's a bigger dude than Sammy Watkins is. So that X receiver that everyone's been pining for, that the Chiefs don't really have a big body that can go up other than Dorrice Fountain, they might have just found.
Yeah, we talked about that. We've talked about that before. Josh Gordon, way, way, way back when at his pro day, ran a 4.57 40, which isn't remarkable. It's a 40th percentile for his weight, but he did have a speed score, which takes into account burst and that kind of stuff, of 85th percentile, speed score of 106, which is pretty good. And obviously, he's 6'3", 225, right? Like, the guy above him, and I'm not going to compare him to Megatron, but the guy above him on the, you know, yards per game, single season record. I don't know. I mean, Babytron, you know, that's Kenny Golladay, except I feel like we can take it away from Kenny Golladay because that guy has not done anything.
Well, and also he's not even a Lion. The only reason that worked was because he was a Lion.
That's true.
Now that he's a Giant. No way.
So let's close the book on Josh Gordon and let's get into, I don't know. This is kind of a what is happening. What's happening is that the Chiefs are bad. And they're 1-2, and this is the first time that the Chiefs have sucked, really, since their 1-5 start in 2015. They've lost 3 out of 4, including the Super Bowl. This is only the third time in the Patrick Mahomes era that they've lost a back-to-back games, which is crazy.
Yeah.
And this is the first time on the history of this podcast that we are recapping live back-to-back losses. What's worse, Taylor, to add insult to injury here, they're last in the division, and they're 2 games back after 3 weeks behind the Raiders and the Broncos, who are both 3-0.
Well, you know, the solace here is that the schedule comparison is night and day between what the Chiefs have faced with the first place schedule that
NFL, but it's going to be the whole year because we have a first place schedule and those idiots are playing a last place schedule. I mean,
well, you really only play four first place teams. You play the three AFC first place teams and the NFC first place team from the, you know, the Packers would be our first place game. But of those, you know, the Ravens were playing, we played the Ravens because we're playing the North, not because they were first. And the Chargers, you know, the Chargers came into Arrowhead and did what they had to do. That game is now, you know, the Chiefs are going to have to get one back in SoFi just to even that series, which is
fine. They will.
But
they can.
Yeah, it's wheels aren't falling off the wagon yet, only 3 weeks in, but it's certainly the weirdest position we've been in since you and I started the podcast, for sure.
Before we get into the game recap, we got to take a little spin around the AFC landscape here. So obviously we made much of the fact after week one that a lot of the other AFC contenders lost. Buffalo lost in week one. Cleveland obviously lost to the Chiefs in week one. Baltimore lost in week one. Tennessee lost in week one. Those are the teams that we kind of had pegged as kind of some of the other top AFC contenders. In Indianapolis, if you want to throw them in the mix, although we knew that they were going to struggle with injuries. But all those teams have since won both of their games. And so they are now all 2-1. And I guess the silver lining there is they still all have the loss. So the Chiefs are only one game behind the Bills, and they play the Bills in week 5. So if the Chiefs win this week and then they go and beat the Bills, then they're going to be ahead of the Bills in 2 weeks.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, for as bad as the first three games have gone for the Chiefs, and they have that same opportunity, obviously, they already own the tiebreaker over Cleveland. And they don't own the tiebreaker against Baltimore, which is kind of a bummer. But, you know, and I don't think we play. Do we play Tennessee this year? I guess we do because they won the South last year.
That's right.
So the Chiefs still have the opportunity to make the game back up on all these teams except for Baltimore, which they've already played and lost to. So at least there's that. And obviously the Chiefs still have 2 games against the Broncos and 2 games against the Raiders. They obviously still have to make a game up against the Chargers, but they're only a game back of the Chargers. So all these teams are still catchable at this point in the season. The Chiefs need to figure their shit out. So final bit of news. We're going to talk about the injury situation. Frank the Shark Clark was on the shelf on Sunday with a hamstring injury, a different hamstring than the one that he injured in training camp. He came back for week 2, although you wouldn't necessarily know it from watching that game in week 2, considering that the Chiefs got almost no pressure against the Baltimore offensive line that was completely decimated. He was out on Sunday because he injured his other hamstring. And Charvarius Ward, who picked up a quad injury between week 2 and week 3, missed the Chargers game. Rashad Fenton was knocked out of that game with a concussion. So the Chiefs did get into the defensive back well. DeAndre Baker got some playing time for once. Juan Thornhill got a couple of snaps on boundary cornerback in the first half, and then he got relegated back to the bench. All three of those guys, as of midweek, have a questionable tag. Willie Gay, Chiefs linebacker. Everybody's clamoring. Everybody thinks Willie Gay is going to solve the Chiefs' defensive woes. Maybe he will.
Maybe.
He's eligible to come off of injured reserve this week. He's been out the first 3 games of the season. Andy Reid says they're going to have to see how his toe responds this week in practice before making that decision. And I guess finally, this isn't really an injury, but boy, I guess we probably better mention that Andy went to the hospital on Sunday.
Yeah. Poor Big Red. He was dehydrated, and I know that with Arrowhead being so packed, putting him in an ambulance to get him to the hospital was mostly a traffic issue, or at least, I mean, I know they were concerned about him, but I think that had something to do with it logistically too. But he checked out, he's back to work. He didn't even miss a full, you know, week of work. So I'm sure he was just, it was hot out there, and I'm sure he was sick to his stomach of watching his team. So, you know, good luck to Big Red. Hope he gets better soon.
Yeah, a lot of jokes after the game about, you know, Andy Reid being too ill to address the media, and a lot of jokesters out there making the same joke about how ill they were watching the Chiefs on Sunday. Look, it's fine. It was a good joke. I feel it. It was ill. It was gross.
Well, now a word from our sponsor.
What?
Week 3 of football is in the books, and now it's time to review the tape and get ready for week 4 with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. To kick off another action-packed week, DraftKings is giving new customers $150 instantly when they bet $1 on any football game. Listen up, because you don't want to miss this. Head to DraftKings Sportsbook app now and place a bet of $1 on any week game to receive $150 in free bets instantly. And if Sportsbook is not yet available in your state, DraftKings still has huge cash prizes for grabs all season long with daily fantasy contests. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code TPPN to receive $150 in free bets when you place a $1 bet on any football game. That's promo code TPPN this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit and $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or Indiana 1-800-9-WITH-IT.
Whew. Wow. I was not expecting that ad read in the middle of our show, but that is fantastic news.
Yes.
We love DraftKings. We're very excited to have them as a sponsor through our host, one of our hosts, the Pigskin Podcast Network. And that's going to be amazing. I don't know if any of you live in those 3 states that were listed in the disclaimer, but you can play DraftKings everywhere. I mean, everywhere that you got an app.
That's right. And we are going to have a Always Sunny in Chiefs Kingdom listener DraftKings League. We teased it a couple times. I talked about it last week. We now have a test run this week to make sure that all the mechanics make sense and that I know how to actually commissioner a league on DraftKings because I hadn't done that before. But I'm going to tweet the link to that league out this week. It's free entry. It's for everybody just to kind of get all of our juices flowing and make sure everybody gets the game and the mechanics and all that stuff. So look for that tweet and join us over on DraftKings.
It's going to be amazing. Stay tuned for that ad read in the middle of every podcast because we are contractually obligated to read it in the middle of the podcast. So for those of you who have listened to this podcast without a mid-podcast ad read for the first, you know, year and a half of our existence, buckle up because that's part of the podcast now. We're getting paid for it. It's dope. Check out DraftKings, etc.
Daddy needs a new pair of shoes. So Austin, let's do the recap of the horrible Chargers game.
Do we have to?
We do. It was gross. It was terrible. The Chiefs began the game with three straight turnovers for the first time since 2000. This
2000?
Is 2000. And the Chiefs actually won that game in 2000 against the Carolina Panthers 15-14, despite starting the game with three turnovers. So, you know, this is a team that hasn't been turning the ball over historically, certainly under Andy Reid, certainly with Patrick Mahomes. This is not something that you would expect the Chiefs to do to shoot themselves in the foot. But after the gross end to the Ravens game, they continued that with three turnovers, and that made four straight drives ending in a turnover when you include the Clyde fumble to end the Ravens game. So they started with the tipped no-look pass that Patrick hit Marcus Kemp a little behind him, but it was certainly a catchable ball. Everybody's kind of Zapruder taped the pass to see how catchable it was. It was catchable, but Asante Samuel Jr. made an amazing
play. Yeah, he's very good. I can't believe they got him in the second round. They've
drafted well. They've done some. Yeah. They've hired well. They've been doing things correct over in San Diego.
Sure have.
Obviously,
did you say San Diego?
I did. I kind of jabbed them because that's the one thing they haven't done correct was they couldn't stick in their hometown. But so then the Chiefs forced a punt, which was a heroic achievement given everything that had gone down. And
yeah,
then
the Chargers punted on their first two possessions.
They did. And Clyde followed up that interception on their first one and his fumble in the previous game with his second career fumble in three drives. So he hadn't fumbled at all, and now he's got the dropsies. So
fumbles in three drives. I mean,
really not good. And then the Chiefs forced a punt after the fumble again. So you're thinking, all right, shit. It's a 0-0 game. Chiefs have turned it over twice. This has got to be the worst this thing can get, right? That's got to be – it can't go any lower.
That is exactly what I thought.
Yeah, me too. So the Chiefs are driving. They're driving. They hit Tyreek Hill, and on a bang-bang play that I've seen this play called an incomplete pass before. I mean, it was absolutely – and it got punched out, and that was another turnover. So that was the third one. So
we have to talk about
– brutal.
We have to talk about the football move. Here because
to me,
if I were a referee in the NFL, I would have called this a fumble, but I also would call this play a fumble every single time it happens. And to me, if a guy literally takes like a step, or if he tries to run with the ball or whatever, like I have a pretty liberal definition of what a football move is, right?
Sure.
Like
same.
I've seen plays where the guy catches the ball and he takes like four or five steps. It's like a travel in the NBA, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like he takes several steps and the ball gets punched out and it gets called an incomplete pass. Like,
right.
I don't understand. This is one of the obviously officiating in the NFL is a shit show. We'll talk about that when we get to the end of the game. It's not consistent, but boy, I don't know. It feels like I don't want to be the guy that blames the refs.
I know.
And we tried really hard not to do that when we recapped the Super Bowl, because while the refereeing in that game was very bad.
Awful.
And very biased against the Chiefs had a lot of other things going against them in that game. But it kind of feels like the first three games of the year that, in addition to the Chiefs turning the ball over at a very unprecedented and very unlike them rate, and in addition to the fact that the defense can't get a single stop in the red zone, unless you count the one where they got a field goal stop, which technically, you know, I mean, they didn't allow a touchdown. That happened later in this game. We'll celebrate that a little bit later on. In addition to all of that, the officiating has been garbage against the Chiefs. It's been bad. I mean, they've been on the wrong end of a lot of calls that are 50-50, if not, you know, 60-40, it usually gets called the other way. I mean, it's it's strange and it's frustrating because Tom Brady doesn't get that treatment.
Oh, he doesn't. He gets the opposite treatment.
This is Patrick Mahomes. I mean, he's the, if you listen to, you know, social media or opposing teams fans, you know, like he's the golden child of the NFL. And feels like we should be getting more calls if that were the case. Yeah. It feels like the ref should be biased in our favor, and that's not really happening.
It's not, and it's extremely frustrating when things aren't going well and you add that on top of it. It's one thing if you're killing it and the refs are kind of trying to hold you back so that the rest of the NFL doesn't just completely give up all hope. But like, this is like kicking the Chiefs while they're down. It is,
yeah,
it is pretty brutal. So the fumbles, two in a row after the interception, mark three, and the Chargers, after having screwed up their first two drives, start to put things together. They start to put a touchdown drive on the board, a 50-yard drive after the second turnover, and a 50-yard drive after the third turnover. And it is now, after a Austin Eckler little dump-off pass where no one was around him at all, he punches into the end zone. It's 14-0 Chargers. They had shanked an extra point on the first touchdown and then went for two here and got it. So
two.
Mike Williams, who was an absolute monster in this game, especially after Fenton went down and the Chiefs were on Hughes and Baker in the on the cornerbacks. They just, neither of them could really hang with Mike Williams, which no one expected them to going into the year. But
well, I mean, you know, Mike Williams is like the best wide receiver in the NFL, and he's now like Randy Moss basically, and you know, he's 27 years old. He shouldn't be doing that. I mean, he's always obviously been a force against the Chiefs, but man, I don't know where that came from, but obviously we previewed the game last week and, you know, painful memories of him catching a 2-point conversion to stun the Chiefs 29-28 a couple of years ago in 2018.
We were there.
And yeah, and he did it again.
So then the Chiefs get the ball back. They obviously were reeling on offense, and they start their drive off with a little 5-yard handoff to Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And the second one is a screen to Clyde that gets absolutely blown up. However that was blocked, it did not work out well. Third and six, and Joey Bosa becomes just this absolute unstoppable monster, gets around the edge, sacks Patrick Mahomes on third and six. So at least the Chiefs didn't turn the ball over. But hell, I mean, it's a 3-and-out.
Four straight drives without points is like, I mean,
it's unthinkable. And I mean,
it's literally like the worst feeling in the world.
Yeah. And then the three straight drives to end the Ravens game with no points. So this was seven drives in a row where the Chiefs didn't put up. They had one punt or two punts and five turnovers in seven drives.
I mean, I get that we're spoiled as Chiefs fans, and we have been ever since Patrick Mahomes became the starting quarterback in 2018. But like, man, I mean, I have high standards now.
Well, you should. They were putting up the most points per drive in the NFL after 2 weeks. The offense was still good.
And the offense was still good in this game. I mean, they were moving the ball. They moved the ball against the Ravens. They were moving the ball against the Chargers until obviously that 3-and-out. But man, I mean, two of those turnovers were in Chargers territory.
That's right. So
three of them. I think all three of them were.
Correct. They were driving. I mean, the Chiefs looked, they were moving the ball every time. And the Chiefs did force a punt on the next Charger drive after the Chargers went for it on fourth and four from midfield. And we're going to talk about going for it on fourth down here in a little bit, because it's a big key to what's happening to the Chiefs so far this year. And the Chargers had a pre-snap penalty on this, which is another precursor of what comes later. On the fourth and four that was complete, backs them up to fourth and nine. They punt here, and the Chiefs get the ball back with 2 minutes to go. They needed something here. They do get down to the Chargers 16-yard line. They kick a field goal with 19 seconds left, and they do cut the lead to 14-3. They get the ball back to start the second half. I was kind of feeling, at least to see a number up on the board that wasn't zero, I was just kind of like, all right, Chiefs, put it together, put a drive. You know, I wasn't like losing it, but I was very disappointed in how the first half happened.
Well, I mean, listen, when you're losing the turnover battle 3-0 and you're only down 11 points, like that's a blessing, right?
Yeah.
Like,
it
was a good position to be in considering how poorly they played in the first half. And, you know, I mean, when they got the ball back down 14-0 with a couple minutes left in the first half, I was thinking, all right, well here we go. We're going to go score a touchdown like right. we do, and we're going right. to come out and we're going to score touchdowns. It's going to be a tie game. Yeah. And it's a new game in second half, despite the fact that you played like shit in the first half. And, you know, I don't know, maybe this was sort of a harbinger of things to come when they go down and they stall in the red zone and they can't put a touchdown on the board. I don't know if that was an ill omen. I mean, obviously it's not. We're going to talk about this with one of our mailbag questions. Omens, ill omens are not a real thing, whatever. But the Chiefs came out of halftime and they went on a long touchdown drive, threw a touchdown pass to Jody Fortson, of all people, the TE4 on the team, that's which right. was awesome. And then they were down, I mean, they were down four, mm-hmm. but they didn't tie the game there. They, you know, they had kicked the field goal before halftime and it was still a Chargers lead.
It was. And, you know, to the momentum, though, with the 4-point deficit, clearly felt like it was with the home team. Clearly felt like, all right, the Chiefs got their first touchdown of the day. It was a 12-play, 75-yard drive. They looked good. They converted some third downs. They were, you know, they were moving. And the Chargers tried to help out. They immediately went 3-and-out. They had a sack on Justin Herbert, which the Chiefs, one of the many, many things that have gone wrong is they haven't had a pass rush this year. And Mike Dana did get to Justin Herbert on second down, and they did eventually force a punt. So now the Chiefs had the ball back, down four, despite three instant turnovers to start the game. And you kind of felt like, all right, this is just where the Chiefs be the Chiefs, and they just go ahead and go down here and win this game. And for the majority of the third quarter, that's how this felt like it was going to go.
Yeah. The Chiefs came back with another long touchdown drive, 10 plays, 70 yards. Clyde Edwards-Helaire catches, scores, gives the Chiefs the 17-14 lead. The Chiefs come back and they exchange two more touchdown drives. The Chargers come back with an 11-play, 75-yard drive. The Chiefs then come back with a 12-play, 72-yard drive. And the Chiefs are back up ahead. And, you know, at this point, like, I don't know. It didn't feel like the game was over. It certainly did not have the same feel that the Ravens game did late in the game, which obviously no. the Chiefs did not win. But the Chiefs had an 11-point lead late in the Ravens game. And right. that game felt like it was over. This game didn't feel over, but it certainly felt like the Chiefs had momentum, such as it is, in their favor.
Yeah, they were playing with the Chargers. It didn't feel like a game that I thought the Chiefs were pissing away or anything like that, despite the early pissing away of the game. I felt like, okay, this is a slug down to the end. So what really got things going poorly, this last Charger drive to go back up, they converted a 4th-and-4 on this drive. So they were definitely showing that, like, look, we're not afraid to go for it on 4th down. They were facing 4th-and-4 from the 28, and they decided to go ahead and go for it. They scored. So then after the Chiefs get a little pass to Mecole Hardman, a little pop pass from the 8-yard line that he takes in, has a really nice kind of staying behind his blockers. Mecole had a pretty good game this game. He definitely has had worse ones, especially the first two of the year. So then the Chargers come back and they get down all the way to 1st and goal at the 1. All right. With 3:19 left, they've got, there was a horrible pass interference. And by horrible, I don't mean the call. I mean, L'Jarius Sneed just basically tackled Keenan Allen, despite the ball being completely uncatchable. And when you do that in the end zone, they're going to call you for it. So with 3:23 left and the Chargers down 3, they've got 1st and goal at the 1. So I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, all right, 3 minutes left. Chiefs are up 3. Just freaking, they're on the 1-yard line. Just let them run it, right? Just give Pat the ball back down 4. That's fine. I'm feeling okay with that. But the Chargers, bless their hearts, tried to charger this thing up, and they did a pretty good job of charging it up. So they have 1st and goal at the 1, but then they have an illegal shift on a penalty on a touchdown pass. So they now back up to 1st and goal at the 6, and you're kind of thinking, like, all right, we can probably keep them out of here. And lo and behold, 2 incomplete passes later, the Chargers line up 4th and goal at the 6, and after having the ball at the 1, they're kicking the game tying field goal with 2:14 to go. And I'm thinking, this game's a wrap.
Yeah, I mean, it literally was the exact same situation, and this is going to make it so frustrating when we have to recap what actually happened in this game. I mean, it's an identical situation to the Ravens game, where, yeah. you know, even after the Chiefs blew the lead in the Ravens game, they had the ball last with enough time to hold on to the ball and go down and kick a field goal with no time left, which is the best defense because if the other team doesn't get the ball back, they can't score. And all you have to do is hold on to the ball and then kick a chip shot at the end of the game to win the game. And we've seen the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes specifically win games like that, you know, a dozen times in his career, probably. Mm-hmm. And I had, even after seeing the Chiefs fuck that situation up last week, I still had utmost confidence in them to do it this week. I mean,
how could you not?
Last week, it was Clyde Edwards-Helaire fumbling on a freak play. It's not like Patrick Mahomes did anything wrong. But this was, I mean, this hurts. This hurts so bad.
So the Chiefs started off, first of all, on their the most pressure-packed drive of the game with 2 minutes to go with a shitty two-yard run.
Wait. They ran the ball on first down?
They ran the ball on first down. Have you seen that before?
Cool.
Just pretty much every drive, every single time, forever. It's been a calling card, especially this year with Andy, which I don't know. Maybe that's EB. I don't know. But they hand it off to Clyde. Shitty little two-yard run. Second and eight, Joey Bosa comes screaming around the corner.
On one leg.
And, I mean, he's phenomenal. And
he's very good.
Pressured Mahomes into an incomplete little dump in the middle that went nowhere to Kelce, setting up a third and eight. Very key play. Patrick Mahomes, when he's down, when he's passing on third down, is basically the greatest quarterback of all time. He has his EPA numbers, all of his metrics just shoot to the moon when it's the pressure situations. But he must have been pressing. It must have been a miscommunication. It must have been the wind. It must have been something. But he threw the worst pass I've ever seen him throw. I'm just going to say it. It was the most catchable interception. It was just a lofted ball to the safety that basically had to just sit there and let it come down and catch it. I mean, there was no play on it. He wasn't pressured. I don't know if he saw something different than what he saw. However, he throws the pick. So the Chargers get the ball back on their 41 with a minute 55 to play, just under the 2 minute warning. But the game was still tied. And even though the interception was a killer and it was a terrible mistake, and we're going to remember that one, the Chargers still had to go win this game. And they get down to the 36 with a minute to go. And they're already in field goal range, like NFL field goal range. Like when you're at 36, 53, you know, I mean, that's certainly makeable for
Justin an NFL Tucker hit a 66 yarder. So, boy, you know,
that was insane off the middle crossbar and in.
After an obvious delay of game that wasn't.
But, that's right. You know. So, and realistically, in a tie game, once you work the ball under a minute into field goal range, you really should just be working the ball, let the clock run, bleed down to a couple seconds, try for a kick, because worst case scenario in that is overtime, right? I mean, that's not so that's what most coaches
you
play
can't,
for there.
You can't lose the game in that situation.
That's
and
right.
To be honest, not that we've pulled these numbers, but like anecdotally, you know, it feels like if you've got the ball and you're in field goal range with a minute to play, even, you know, at a 53-yarder or whatever, feels like NFL teams in 2021 win that game way more than they even set
tie
it overtime. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Like it those, feels like NFL teams with kickers and the way that offenses are designed, it feels like, you know, most of the time that you're in that situation, you're going to find a way to win the game.
So the Chargers, who have kicker Tristan Vizcaino, who they clearly did not trust in this game. He missed a point after earlier. And when they got into field goal range, it's like they didn't even consider the fact that they could run the ball three times and kick the field goal. So after getting down to the 36, they get an incomplete pass on second down, stops the clock. Didn't make Chiefs use a timeout. Incomplete pass on third down, stops the clock. Now they're sitting there with a fourth and four from the Chiefs 30, which is only a 47-yard field goal. Those are extremely makeable in the NFL.
Yeah, super makeable.
With 48 seconds left, they decide they're going to run out the offense instead of kicking a field goal here, which honestly, if they don't hit that fourth down there and the Chiefs retake the ball over with 48 seconds left from their 30, like everyone's going to be thinking like, what the fuck were the Chargers doing? So they come out there and they're all nervous about it because it's a huge play and they feel like, oh, the coach is being such an idiot going for this. And there's a false start. So now it's fourth and nine from the 35. And yes, the kick got harder, but it's also the fourth down got harder.
Fourth and nine.
But did that deter the Chargers from going for it? No. They still trot the offense out on fourth and nine to try and keep moving these sticks. And the DPI call, the pass interference call against DeAndre Baker here, has been a complete mystery to basically everyone that was watching this game. There was no early contact. There was no, he was looking at the ball. He contacts the receiver after the ball gets there. The ball falls incomplete and the ref just walks up, throws a flag, says it's pass interference. And with under a minute, we're just moving on. There's no,
and that's it. I mean,
there's barely any time to even talk about it.
It's not reviewable. You can't challenge it anymore because they took that out.
Cause it was a shit show when they were challenging.
The refs basically boycotted that and just decided they were going to be shitty whenever anybody challenged pass interference. And so the NFL just gave up and got rid of it. I mean, it was terrible.
It was terrible. And so I think the worst coaching decision that I've seen in quite a while happens after that play. So after that, there's 41 seconds.
And that's after they go for it on fourth and nine.
That's an extremely
questionable call. It was. And we're huge proponents of going for it.
We are.
Going for it on fourth and nine when you're in field goal range. And if you miss the field goal, I mean, again, like, and at this point, they would have given the ball back to the Chiefs, but that's because they didn't run the clock down. They passed the ball. I mean, like,
they should have run the ball and kicked the field goal. And
a slew of bad coaching decisions here.
So now with 41 seconds left, ball in the 20, and they throw a pass to Mike Williams, who's been eating everybody all day, and he's pushed out of bounds at the 4 with 32 seconds left. So now you're thinking, okay, ball in the 4, 32 seconds left. The Chiefs have two timeouts, or one timeout. The Chiefs only had one timeout. So the Chargers literally could kneel it a couple times and kick a extra point, closer than an extra point these days. From the 4 is a 21-yard field goal. I mean, that's the extra points are 33. So instead of doing that, the Chargers, for some reason, throw the ball for a touchdown, which was extremely weird. They basically had the game sewn up. All they had to do was kneel it and kick a field goal, and they walk out of there. And even if they miss their little chip shot field goal, the game's tied and it goes to overtime. Right. But they throw a ball to Mike Williams. Everyone's thinking, what are they doing? They did shank the extra point, so maybe they were onto something, not trusting their kicker to even kick a 21-yard field goal. Maybe he was just completely spooked, but I don't think that. So they give the ball back to the Chiefs up 6 with 30 seconds to play, which is, I would only call this Anthony Lynn levels of bad clock management. I mean, that was I don't even know why they fired Anthony Lynn if they were going to bring in Brandon Staley and he was going to do the exact same shit.
It was still only the second worst clock management of the week because did you see Mike McCarthy on Monday Night Football?
Yes, I did. He just completely did not want the ball back.
He didn't want it.
It was 3rd and 24 with 1:40 left, and he was like,
nah, he didn't call a single timeout.
Go ahead and let it tick down 40 seconds both times, and I'm just going to kneel it when I get the ball back.
It's ridiculous.
Chargers. So they give the ball back to the Chiefs, and the desperation Hail Mary that the Chiefs throw with no time left, Hill and Kelsey both literally get tackled to the ground by defenders that weren't facing the ball on one of the – everyone always says, well, they're not going to call pass interference on Hail Mary. Why? Why are they not going to call it if it's pass interference?
Like, I get that Hail Marys are officiated differently than normal plays. But what I don't understand, and this is where I think you can make some hay, is there's no credible explanation for how the Chiefs committed DPI on 4th and 9 and the Chargers didn't commit it on the Hail Mary at the end of the game. Like, even if you're going to make this argument that end of game situations should be officiated differently, there's no way that you can really distinguish those two other than the fact that the Chiefs would have been like one of the last plays of the game. And it is technically, I mean, it's a Hail Mary. It wasn't a normal pass play, but I just don't understand. You really cannot make an argument that, you know, the Chiefs committed DPI, but the Chargers didn't commit DPI, but that's how it was called. And that's the game.
So Chiefs lose, Chargers win. Chargers are 2-1. Chiefs are 4th place in the AFC West.
We're not going to do 5-star men, trash men, and wild cards this week because everyone's an honorary trash man.
That's right.
I mean, except for Travis Kelce. Travis Kelce can never be a trash man.
Yep.
This was a gross, horrible, awful game. The Chiefs are on to Philadelphia. Let's preview week 4.
Yeah, I mean, don't go birds, I guess.
No, don't go Birds.
We've been go Birds-ing every time we've mentioned the Eagles on this podcast.
Sure, but, sure. Typically, we're a go Birds because this podcast's namesake is It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. We've got love for the gang and gang green, but not this week because the Chiefs are traveling to Philadelphia to play the Eagles. This will be their first time traveling to Philadelphia since Andy Reid's third game ever as head coach of the Chiefs in 2013. That was against Mike Vick on Thursday Night Football, and the Chiefs went to 3-0 in that game. And Andy's first season in Kansas City, he's been going for his 100th win as coach of the Chiefs for this will be the third week in a row that he's going for it. So if he gets it, which by when God, he better, it will make him the first coach ever in the history of the NFL to win 100 games as the coach of two different franchises. He has 140 wins with the Eagles, and this will be win number 100 for the Chiefs when he gets it. So the Eagles under Nick Sirianni are 1-2. They blew out the Falcons in week one, beat the hell out of the Falcons. And I was thinking, man, you know, the Eagles, I think I picked them to finish third in the division,
last maybe,
or maybe even
like four wins.
I don't think I would have picked them to finish behind the Giants because I really have no love for the Giants. But
fair.
I certainly did not pick them to finish highly in the NFC East. They looked really good in week one against the Falcons. Turns out the Falcons are just really bad. In week two, they played the 49ers, who I don't know what to think about the 49ers, but they played the 49ers tight. And so you don't really learn a whole lot about either of those teams. Then this week on Monday Night Football, they got absolutely clowned by the Cowboys. Yeah. The Cowboys had 19 first downs in the first half, and the Eagles had one first down. It's almost impossible. So the Eagles get absolutely destroyed. This will be the second time this year that the Chiefs are playing an opponent where their opponent is on short rest. Eagles just played on Monday night. They have to come back and play the Chiefs on Sunday. This will also be the second game, similarly, where the team coming off a horrible Monday night loss is down like half of their starting offensive line.
Right. Not that that seems to matter.
Stop me if you've heard this one before, Taylor.
Yeah. With an athletic running quarterback.
Yeah.
With a bird, mascot.
Yeah. Okay. Let's stop. I can't do this. So there are some interesting parallels, let's say, between the this Eagles team and the Baltimore Ravens, who the Chiefs lost to in week two. But I don't know. Is it going to matter? Are the Chiefs, I mean, do you see, I don't want to say, is this too easy? That was the question that I posed
right
before week two against the Ravens. And Jesus the answer Christ. Was, yes, it is. And then the Chiefs lost that game. So I don't want to ask that, but is there anything about Philadelphia that scares you?
Yeah, and it's all basically related to the Chiefs. It's all through. It's all looking at it through the prism of what is happening to this team, and if the Eagles play with the Chiefs, it says everything about the Chiefs and almost nothing about the Eagles, in my opinion.
Sure.
And that's what I'm scared of. I'm scared of being stressed on Sunday. I'm scared of this being a shitty Chiefs team that we're watching, that despite having the best player on the planet and despite having the two best offensive weapons, pass catching weapons that the game knows, is still going to go out there and struggle to beat crappy teams. Like, that would be heartbreaking to me. That's what scares me. Nothing about the Eagles, no Miles Sanders or Devontae Smith or any of them, Jalen Hurts, none of them scare me. It's really just, and even Fletcher Cox, any of the defensive players, it's all about how the Chiefs respond here.
It is. And I agree with you. I mean, it's cliche a little bit, but the Chiefs really have demonstrated through the first 3 weeks that the best way to beat the Chiefs is by having the Chiefs beat themselves. And we'll talk about that a little bit with a mailbag question here from PKS that I'm going to blast through here in a minute. But yeah, I mean, I think the Chiefs just have to play their game, and they have to obviously limit the turnovers and do what the Chiefs do, and they should win this game. I will say, on the defensive side of the ball, Philly's defense matching up against our offense. Looking forward to seeing Steven Nelson out there.
That's right.
On the defensive side of the ball.
Wonder if he still has his Chiefs helmet.
That's a great question. He was working out with the Chiefs helmet in the offseason. He's exchanged quite a few barbs with Chiefs Kingdom community on Twitter over the years and Instagram as well. But that'll be fun if we get Tyreek on Steven Nelson on Sunday. That could be a breakout for the Cheetah. Looking forward to that. You want to predict this game?
I mean, not really. Like I feel apprehensive to do so. I will say that if this Chiefs team, this game is going to say a lot about kind of how I feel the Chiefs are going to do this year.
Yeah.
And if they come out and they look like the 2018-19 Chiefs, if they look like the team that has their shit together and that beats bad teams, the Chiefs haven't won a game by more than 6 points since week 8 last year. They obviously, well,
except for the
playoff except game for the playoffs, a regular the season game. That's correct. That's correct. So, you know, they haven't really beaten up on a bad team in a while. And
yeah, the last team that they beat up on in the regular season was the Jets.
The Jets, exactly. And Mahomes had 5 touchdown passes and they looked unbelievable. And the Jets are a pit of despair. So,
yeah, the Jets.
So I'm going to say that the things are still always sunny. And I do think the Chiefs come out into Philadelphia. They give Andy Reid his do 100th win against the other team that he has 100 wins with. And I think the Chiefs win pretty handily. I'll go 31-14.
31-14. That would be quite a performance by the Chiefs defense. I'm going to go a little bit higher scoring. I'm going to say the Chiefs put up 42 and the Eagles put up 24. So 42-24 Chiefs is going to be my prediction. Let's get into a mailbag. It's always good to hear from our fans. We love you guys. Thank you for bearing with us. Thank you for listening to this bummer of an episode. And we've got our guy, PKS at Polish Chiefs fan. Ka-ka! You guys should do something like a draft of blue pens to read the Chiefs. XD, that's the laughing face. So I literally pulled like every game that the Chiefs have lost in 2018 and 2019. And then it got kind of depressing, so I stopped. But I'm just going to blast through the highlights here really quick, because I think it is illuminating to kind of look at these games like with some perspective, with some distance, and really take a look at like what it takes to actually beat the Chiefs, right? Because we've now,
what the blueprint actually is.
Yeah, we've now got 3 years and change of Patrick Mahomes as a starter, and that includes hardly any losses and a ton of wins. And the games that they've lost are actually kind of ridiculous. So if you go back to 2018, first game that Patrick Mahomes has ever lost, 43-40 loss to New England. You've got Bill Belichick, so that's part of the blueprint. Have the greatest defensive coach of all time playing against Patrick Mahomes, who's playing in his 6th game ever. Okay, you're going to pick him off twice in the first half, hold him to 9 points in the first half, and then you've got to hold on for dear life in the second half, and get the ball last with Tom Brady against the worst defense in the NFL. Because the Chiefs scored 31 points in the second half on like 8 minutes time of possession. And they only lost because Tom Brady got the ball last and kicked a field goal. In November of that year, the 54-51 loss to the Los Angeles Rams. Well, I guess the blueprint here is score 54 points. Even though Patrick Mahomes is 18-9 when his defense allows 24 plus points, which is by far the best mark in NFL history. He's the only quarterback in NFL history who has a winning record when his defense allows 24 plus points. The only one. He is 0-1 when his opponent scores 54 points. So obviously that's the blueprint there. If you score 54, that's you're it. Good. He's actually 0-3 when his opponent scores 40 plus. So really, if you can get to 40 on the scoreboard against the Chiefs, you lock got a chance. In. Yeah, you got a chance, because obviously he's a scrub. He can't beat somebody that scores 40. In December, we teased this earlier in the show, 29-28 loss to the Chargers. Part of the blueprint here is the Chiefs only got 8 drives total in this game. They only touched the ball 8 times. They scored 4 touchdowns on 8 drives, which is pretty good, 50% rate. They punted 4 times. The Chargers, like the Patriots, got the ball last. They got an extremely favorable DPI call to set up first and goal with 8 seconds left.
Heard that before. And
then they got a 2-point conversion against the worst defense in the NFL. The following week, they played the Seattle Seahawks in Seattle. This is the only game, well, it was the only game at the time. I mean, the Chiefs were trailing deep into this game. They ended up only losing by 1 touchdown. But this essentially, the blueprint for this game, have Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
Who threw for 271 yards and 3 touchdowns on 29 pass attempts. He was
and was fire. Surgical. I mean he was as good as Russell Wilson gets, and he is very good.
And then the last loss in 2018, 37-31 in New England in overtime. Again, having Tom Brady get the ball last against the worst defense in the NFL, that's a great blueprint. But also, on top of that, you have to add into the blueprint on there, D-Force jumps off sides on an interception that would have sent the Chiefs to the Super Bowl. Cool. Yep. That's still the blueprint. Hurts. So 2018, 3 of the 5 losses that the Chiefs had in 2018 resulted in the opponent taking the lead with no time left. So literally 60% of the losses, the Chiefs, just the other team had the ball last against the Bob Sutton defense, right? One of the other two games involved the opponent scoring 54 points. And the other one involved Russell Wilson playing out of his mind. Like, those are the blueprints, right? Either get the ball last, score 50, or have Russell Wilson playing out of his mind. So going ahead to 2019, boy, I mean, we've recapped the season before. This was our very first season of this podcast. Was we did a game-by-game recap of the 2019 season. And going back over these losses again to create this blueprint for you, PKS, was absurd. In October, the Chiefs lost 19-13 to Indianapolis. And here, this blueprint is convoluted as shit, right? Okay, so first, injuries. The Chiefs were missing Eric Fisher in this game. They were missing Tyreek Hill in this game. Sammy Watkins got injured after two snaps and left the game. So, listen, it's one thing to go into a game banged up, right, and know that you're not going to have Eric Fisher and know that you're not going to have Tyreek Hill.
Yes.
It's another thing to go into the game expecting to have Sammy Watkins and designing your game plan around having Sammy Watkins as your number one wide receiver, and then having him get hurt 5 minutes into the game and not having him, right? Like, they spend the entire week planning to have Sammy Watkins. These are the plays we're going to run for Sammy. He's going to be our number one target in this game, you know, after Travis Kelce, and then after two snaps, he gets hurt. On top of that, Patrick Mahomes was playing with a bad ankle. He reactivated it after Cam Irving, filling in for Eric Fisher, stepped on his ankle, okay? Mm-hmm. Time of possession, the Chiefs had the ball for just 22 minutes and 45 seconds. Okay. Pound the rock, the Colts outrushed the Chiefs 180 yards to 36. All right. Bad play calling by the Chiefs. Andy did his famous second and 30 run.
Yeah.
He was trailing 16 to 10 in the fourth quarter.
It's and way after, too famous, man.
After he ran on second and 30, Byron Pringle picks up 27 of 28 yards on third down. Should have had the final yard. He juked into the only guy between him and the sticks.
Yeah.
Okay, tackled himself essentially to not convert it on third and 28. And then on fourth and one, they ran Damian Williams up the middle for a 1 yard loss, turned it over on downs to the
Kansas City. Noted power back Damian Williams.
And lost the game 19-13, by far the lowest scoring game in the Patrick Mahomes era. And then the following week against the Houston Texans, a 31-24 loss. This one, you got the bad officiating aspect of the blueprint, right? Like that one pops up frequently, but this is the first one where you could really like point to the officiating as one of the absolute reasons the Chiefs lost this game. Patrick Mahomes throws his first interception of the year. That was cool when he didn't throw one until mid-October, right? That was great. Those were the days. He throws his first interception of the year on a play where Travis Kelce gets literally like completely mauled in the middle of his route, right? And the refs decide to pick up a flag.
Yeah, they threw it.
They threw the flag. Because they saw Travis Kelce get absolutely mauled. And then, you know, New York gets in their ear and they're like, you should pick this flag up. They're too good. Should have been a free play. Should have been an automatic first down. Patrick Mahomes obviously knew that it was a free play, which is why he threw the ball in the first place. He didn't throw an interception because he made a bad choice. He literally saw the ref throw the flag. Then he let the ball go. And then they picked the flag up.
It's ridiculous, man.
The Chiefs are outrushed in this game, 192 yards to 53. They lose the time of possession battle, 39 minutes, 48 seconds to 20 minutes and 12 seconds. So they literally almost get doubled up in time of possession. They still had a 24-23 lead in this game going into the fourth quarter, only to see the defense surrender a 93-yard, 8-minute and 32-second touchdown drive and a two-point conversion to give the Texans a 31-24 lead. And then, after a three and out where the Chiefs went -4 yard pass to LeSean McCoy on first down, then on second and 14, ran for 1 yard, another second and long run, and then tried to convert third and 13 by throwing to Blake Bell in a game where Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce did play. The defense let the Texans hold onto the ball for 5 minutes and 3 seconds and run out the clock. They literally did not touch the ball for more than about 30 seconds in the fourth quarter, when they were ahead going
in. That's a pretty good blueprint.
Tyreek Hill was back in this game. Eric Fisher was out. Chris Jones was out. The left side of the offensive line was Cam Irving and Martinez Rankin. You've got the injuries. You've got the bad officiating. You've got the bad run defense. You've got the bad play calling. This is just a mismatch, right? And then the last loss in 2019, November 18th, 2019, a date that will live in infamy, a 35-32 loss at Tennessee. if you're talking Blueprints to Beat the Chiefs, Taylor, this is basically one of those Rube Goldberg machines, you know, like the fucking like chicken gets shot in the ass with a BB gun and it like lays an egg and it tumbles down, you know, one of those little twirly slides.
Oh, that's perfect.
And it pops a balloon and whatever. I mean, the Chiefs got, this was outrageous. Obviously, they got completely burned in the run game by Derrick Henry in this game. They lost the turnover battle in this game. They did not convert very well on third down. They had the ball at the end of the game, and they had two straight drives where they could have kicked a field goal to either go ahead or win the game and didn't get the field goal. It was blocked.
Yeah.
On, I mean, it was blocked on the, I don't remember if it was the first one or the second one that was blocked.
The second one, the last play of the game.
The last play of the game was a block. And the one before that, Butker basically had to, or I guess it was, technically it was Colquitt, right? Picked the ball up and tried to throw it away because they jumped the snap. And I mean, listen, that's not a blueprint to beat the Chiefs. None of these are blueprints to beat the Chiefs is at the end of the day. I mean, you just have to rely on the Chiefs beating themselves, or you have to rely on injuries. Have to rely on the referees, you know, like there's a Venn diagram that you can make from these losses. And, you know, the part where they overlap, where the Chiefs actually lose a game, it's like four circles that are overlapping to get to a loss in any of these games.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yep. There's no, you know, people have started, they want the blueprint. They want it to exist, right? Because if there's no blueprint, then how is anyone going to beat this team? So yes, there have been some miracle wins by the Chiefs opposition in the Patrick Mahomes era. But if you're going into this game expecting any of these things to happen, it's a fool's errand. It's just not the way that, you know, I mean, sure, it can happen, but there's no plan. There's no personnel type. There's no defense to run against the Chiefs. There's no offensive game plan that, well, I mean, you know, the Chiefs have had their defensive struggles, and sure, you can beat the Chiefs offense by beating their defense, but it's just time and time again, the Chiefs showed that they were up to the task. Cause I mean, there are plenty of games that went the way that these blueprints went and the Chiefs still came out on top.
Correct.
Like, you know, it's not like every time any of this stuff happens, the Chiefs lose. You have to, all of this happen and then still hope that you have enough. As we've said this
week, one against the Browns.
Week one against the Browns, things didn't go right, but it still wasn't enough. Hell, week two and week three, the Chiefs had a shot in these games despite four turnovers and despite everything that went wrong against them. They still had a chance to win, and that's what this team gives you, is a chance every single week.
We've got a question here from Juicy Josh, 93.
Caca!
97. 97. I said 93. I don't know what was going through my head here. With an expanded season, do you think we'll see Mahomes pass for 6,000 yards, or will that lead to him sitting more games at the end of the season, or will seeding trump that? Keep up the great work. Thank you, Juicy Josh. Thanks, we appreciate the question. What do you think, Taylor?
Well, so I'll address the sitting part first. So just because
he's not going to be sitting extra games this year.
No. Well, no, especially not this year. But just because there are extra games, every team has to play those extra games, and I don't think it necessarily means that the Chiefs are going to build a bigger lead on the rest of the AFC just because there are more games. I think that the chances that the Chiefs have a one seed locked in place with two games to go is extremely low. I mean,
it's definitely not going to happen this year.
Not this year, but even at the Chiefs at their peak powers, it's just hard to get that the math to work out to where you are locked in as the best team with 2 weeks to go. So I don't think he'll be sitting more. I think he will be playing at least 16 games a year. Week 17, it's pretty likely usually that he'll sit. But no, I think that it won't lead to any more sitting. And then the 6,000 yards part, I mean, look, he barely passed over 5,000 when the Chiefs were throwing the ball all over the yard in 2018.
They had a terrible defense.
The game scripts allowed him to pass a lot, and he broke 5,000. And, you know, the record's 5,400, which means, you know, 54 or 55 or whatever it is that Peyton Manning got.
Yeah,
so even if you get one more game there, you'd have to throw for 500 yards to touch 6,000. And so he would have to have the NFL record pace through 16 games and then have a 17th game that's a monster game in order to pass six. It's doable. It's possible. If anyone's going to end their career with the most passing yards of a season, and it's not Peyton Manning, it's going to be Patrick Mahomes. So yeah, it's possible, but I wouldn't I wouldn't look at 6,000 yards as something that is achievable.
Yeah, I agree with that. We've got one here, finally, from our friend Max's mom, Leanne Sprague. Thanks for listening to the podcast, Leanne.
Loyal bird of war. Ka-ka!
Ka-ka! Can you guys expound on whether or not jinxes are a thing, like which players have habits/rituals, scientific theory, etc.? Taylor, do you want to handle this one?
Well, so you and I have long talked about our, I don't want to say disdain for jinxes, but maybe there's no better way to put it. I think that's a good way to describe it. Disdain, yeah. I don't think that anything other than what happens on the football field is impacting the results on the football field or the baseball diamond or whatever it may be. We are not believers in some sort of, you know, good juju, bad juju, other than like a mindset. Like, I get if you need a habit or a ritual before the game to get your mind right, like that's fine. You know, sure. if you got to eat a certain thing every time to kind of feel like, okay, I'm like in the game mode or whatever, like I can see that.
But that's something players. That's something that a player does on an individual level. Cause the players are playing in the game, right? Yep. Like, I mean, yes. If a player wants to do something that the player feels like
that's what
they need to do to get them in the right headspace to play in the game, that's fine. They're on the field.
Yes.
It's totally different if you feel like you have to do something the same way every time. You gotta, you know, eat your brown and drink your yellow or whatever it is, you know, like that's not affecting what happens on the field.
Yeah. You know, she asked which players have habits or rituals specifically. I do think that there's something to be said for consistency in the NFL and, you know, these guys are creatures of habit and they've got to have a lot of things kind of the same inputs so that they can give it the same output. And if that means that they've got to eat the same game day meal and all that stuff, I don't know of any specific player rituals, at least on the Chiefs, as far as what they get up to before the games. But I do think that there's some merit to that. Now, anything that anyone does outside of the game has zero bearing on the outcome.
Yeah, guys, what you wear your lucky underwear, what you eat before a game, whatever. That doesn't mean that rituals aren't fun. You know, like when I was back in Kansas City, we would get Q39 before every game. We get Pitmaster brisket every time. That was a fun ritual because Pitmaster briskets are delicious. And
but you didn't think you were impacting anything by
We went during the 2019 season. I think it was during the 2019 season that Mahomes Magic Crunch came out. Correct.
Yeah.
We would try and eat a bowl of Mahomes Magic Crunch every day before the game, like our little communion. It's not that we're against them for ritual's sake, because they are fun and they're funny, but they do not impact what happens on the field whatsoever. And a good example of this is no hitters, right? Like in baseball, the no hitter jinx. There are people that believe that if one person anywhere in the world talks about a no hitter while it's going on, that a no hitter doesn't happen, which is obviously absurd because every time that a no hitter happens, there are literally thousands or millions of people talking about it somewhere in the world at any given time. And yet still no hitters happen. In fact, there was a record number of no hitters this year. Mm-hmm. We used to have a Facebook group to talk about baseball that we no longer really participate in because baseball is boring. And we have Patrick Mahomes, we have football, no offense to the baseball fans out there, but you know, every time there was no hitter through like seven innings, we would go in there and post on it. And, you know, we actually did have several that got broken up, which obviously is coincidence. No hitters are hard to throw. But, you know, occasionally one will break through, and that's proof that jinxes aren't real. So thank you for the question, Leanne. Appreciate you listening. Till next time, it's always sunny in Chiefs Kingdom.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.